Well, here we go. So let's start on agency one. Go ahead,
Gary. Mr. Chairman, thank you very much. And Mary Kay wanted me to introduce myself, but I am Carrie Gray, the governor's chief of staff. And I think this will be really straightforward. I'm hoping that we'll get you out of here before 11. So the governor's first exception request starts on page 12 of the budget. And it's a request for IT equipment replacement. And this is one of the areas that the governor didn't cover in great detail in his presentation, but as we went through all of the budgets, when the legislature established ETS in 2012, one of the things that ETS was able to accomplish was to get agencies on a routine replacement schedule for computer equipment, and then also to negotiate a large cost discount when those when that equipment was purchased. This year, we asked every agency to go back to ETS and to determine which pieces of equipment could last a little longer than their replacement cycle. But we also asked agencies to be very careful and to not get it so tight that that a critical piece of equipment would go down and people weren't able to get their job done. So in the governor's request for equipment replacement, you'll see that they were that it's about $7,145, and that would be probably about one-third of the equipment that was originally slated for replacement. We don't have particularly sensitive equipment in the governor's office or, you know, it's just regular hardware and computer equipment, and we believe that that will take us through the biennium without a problem. So the next exception request then would be on page 21. That would really be the same rationale and explanation that I've provided for the request for a replacement on page 12, only this is for the policy side of the governor's office, where we have a few more people, so you'll see there's a little bit of increased cost. And also on page 21 is a 400 series request for $14,003. The equipment was $14,290. So the 400 series request would be kind of a cost allocation. Once ETS was set up and really got to running, how it actually funds most of what it does with its folks is it actually bills agencies for the hours that it spends. Now it has a history of the hours that it spends working on equipment for outages or hooking things up or those kinds of things for on the behalf of agency. And so based on our history, $14,003 would be a right amount for that series. And the flip side of this is that this series, when you see this in agency budgets, this will be the expense side for the agency, and then ETS is using this as a revenue part of their budget. On page 22, you'll see the reduction of two positions in the governor's office. We had a couple of folks that we had positions for, and we eliminated those positions. The salary is not the complete salary for those positions because when we made our wage adjustments at the governor's office, we had when the governor first took office and we began to hire people, we actually sort of miscued what we ought to be doing with so we had some policy people in administrative positions where the budget for the position wasn't sufficient to cover that policy person, and so we covered any of those shortfalls out of these two positions, and then we're given the positions back with the remainder of the salaries attached to those positions. So let me give you a for example, because I see Senator Washberger look. We put a policy person in an administrative position. That position was budgeted for $40,000 a year. The policy folks really make closer to $100,000 a year. So we couldn't cover that just out of a pay raise. So what we did was we borrowed money out of these two positions for the misalignment that we had made when we originally put people in the positions that we put them in.
Mr. Chairman, here, Jill, could you give us a breakdown of what those positions are and how much went to those positions, and to so we can have a better understanding of exactly both when those transfers took place and what those specific positions are. And I'm curious why, if you did this last year, or was it before last year, and why why we're just getting it now? Because, and what's the total amount that you changed? I think two positions at 100,000 a piece, that's probably $220,000-$240,000. So how much are you retaining back from those two positions? So it's just so we can have a better explanation of what those are.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Nicholas, absolutely. I could just get that to you later rather than guessing. Is that's what you want me to do? Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So, Carrie, you're eliminating two positions. Just run a suit of dollars in, and you're keeping all the money except how much is moving, then just show us how that works.
It's again. On page 22, so we'll be giving back $65,000. And I think what this does not show, Mr. Chairman, is the gross. I mean, what was associated with these positions originally versus what we're giving back? I think that was maybe Representative Nicholas's question. So one of these, I can tell you, was a clerical position that would have been budgeted at maybe $40,000 a year. And plus its benefits. So without having it in front of me to give you an exact, but let's say that one of these positions would have been a $100,000 a year position. I can't tell you exactly what the other position would have been. I can answer the part of the question about why now. So for example, we have a policy advisor that, we originally hired at much lower than every other one of our policy advisors. There was a great inequity in that. And for that individual, we wouldn't change him because we won't let other agencies do that. So he simply either had to stay at the salary of $42,000 or leave until the pay raises came around. And when you could actually make an adjustment for pay raises and reclassify, we did that. But it seemed incorrect to us to use all of our pay raise money, which we distributed among all staff, just for that one individual. So we borrowed money out of these positions, which were given back. I think that actually accounts for probably almost all of it that we took. So we're giving back the two positions with the remainder of the salary funds that we didn't use.
Senator Burns and then Representative Nicholas.
I'll defer to Bob.
Okay, go ahead.
I'm going to your overall budget, and you go from on your standard budget 47 employees to 50 employees. And so does that include then the reduction of two employees, so you actually have an increase of more than three employees in total?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Nicholas, you would have to divide out the governor's office. The governor's office actually has a reduction in employees. Part of the governor's office budget includes Homeland Security, and so Director Cameron is here to talk to you about his part of the budget. But there would have been, the governor's office, I think, has a net decrease since he took office of two, maybe even three positions. And when I call it the governor's office, I think that we and sure. You all think of the policy office and our administration, and we don't think of Homeland Security. So these increases come from Homeland Security.
So those other two are the AWACS positions with Homeland Security. Is that your understanding? Yeah.
Correct.
Okay.
Chairman?
Go ahead, Senator Burns.
So I understand that. So as I understand this, and I do appreciate the fact that it's Homeland Security, so you can't answer to, but you basically replaced two, as I understand from the presentation, you've replaced two administrative positions with two policy positions, which are each higher salaried?
No. I don't have the position count in front of me, but let's say that the governor's office, again, referring only to the policy and administration of the governor's office, has 29 employees. We would have reduced it by two, so 27. So when we started, it had 29 employees. But for one of those people, we hired them incorrectly as an administrative person when they were really a policy person. So we're actually giving back two. Out of the 29 positions, we're giving back two complete positions, and we're not doing two for one. We just simply use some of the salary associated with the two positions that were given back to equalize the pay of this policy person with the other policy people in the office.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I'll just reflect that that's something that it has been happening throughout state government here with these vacant positions, and other agencies have been using the money from these vacant positions to give raises to people in other positions, and it's frankly something I really have a problem with. I think a number of people on this committee have a problem with. In the governor's office, you know, that's not so bad, but if the governor's office is doing it, how can we really hammer, you know, how can we really come down on the other agencies for doing it?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Burns, is something that we watch really closely, and I guess I don't feel like I must be explaining it very well. You know, this individual was hired in 2010 at a salary that, where, like I said, we had simply miscued it. So the fact that so we, as a normal matter, reclassification of an employee would have to come through a B-11 process, and we normally just don't allow that to happen. And but when the pay increases came through, and as part of the pay increases, there was an overall view of the entire state where people had misclassifications of employees, let's say, or employees that they thought had been treated in a way that was just by error. We actually looked over all of those requests. There were 500 statewide. And we did allow at that juncture people to go to the what's the committee called? The Compensation Committee, which is composed of legislators and executive branch folks, and have their classifications reviewed at that point in time, at a single point in time, not just as I want to give somebody a raise or because that works out. And where there were pay inequities that the Compensation Committee agreed were truly in error, we allowed people to go ahead and correct those, as long as they corrected them using their existing 100 series, that they could not come back for budget increases to get that done. So based on different people I've talked to, is that we didn't allow that to be a budget creep and for that to come back through as an increase to the 100 series part of the budget, which I think is part of what this committee and the legislature likes to be sure is protected. So I guess I viewed it as that we took an extra step to make sure that we protected the 100 series and that folks had to make that up out of their existing 100 series without an increase.
Mr. Chair, you know, Kerry, I guess my only thought is that you didn't have a policy position, so you put someone with policy credentials into an administrative position who was perhaps performing policy work. To me, that's not the same thing as making a mistake. You said if you'd like to work for the governor, you can do it for $40,000 a year. Now, after you've had that person since 2010, you say, let's put you where you're supposed to be. So we're going to increase your salary by basically taking away a lesser-paying position for a higher-paying position. And if that's what it is, that's what it is. But it's hard to me to perceive that from 2010 until now that this person didn't know what they were hired at and what their qualifications were and whether or not it should be a policy position or not. But, I mean, I don't have a lot of grief with it other than the fact that that's the appearance of it on the surface.
Well, you know, Mr. Chairman, Representative Nicholas, actually I'm just going to tell you that it's true. If you come into this job and you come in and, you know, a state classification and the payrolls and what the restrictions and limitations of those situations are really aren't known to you or really to anybody on the governor's staff at that time. So you take a position, you hire it, then you begin to understand the budget parameters. And I will tell you, it's a little bit complex. It's not as straightforward as you might think. And today, when I, as you understand those things, I would tell you I can see what you're saying. But in essence, we hired a young man who has been and always has been from the get-go a policy person. Throughout his tenure at our office, He agreed to continue at the lesser salary. He was doing the same work as all other policy people, but being paid significantly less. It was something that I felt personally very guilty about, but that in the position of the governor's office, for the reasons mentioned by Senator Burns, we would not adjust his pay. And then when the this juncture came where many agencies, particularly the Highway Patrol and Corrections, and there were different agencies that felt that they had these errors, which in my view for them probably were legitimate classification areas for classes of people, we also allowed then our own office to go through the classification review by the Compensation Committee. The Compensation Committee agreed that these were misclassified people, and I think you could word it the way that you do, but I think that that is gives short shrift to what really happened. And so this is just an area, like I said, where the governor's office, I think, has taken a strong stand, understanding the legislative mandate that 100 series shouldn't have that creep. And we just haven't allowed it, and we didn't allow it out of our own office until this juncture. And then we understood that we had to figure out a way to pay this position without increasing our 100 series. And we've done that. In fact, we're given 100 series dollars and two positions back, just not the full salary associated with those.
Go ahead, Representative Greer.
Kerry, and I don't want to keep belaboring the point, but, you know, we said we don't have Series 100 creep, but we're not, we have vacant positions. The dollar amounts are staying there, but we don't have positions filled. We don't have people doing the jobs that were apparently created for them to do.
So
we are getting compensation creep, are we not?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Greer, you know, I guess I would say not. The state at this time has approximately 987 vacant positions. And in the course of the hiring freeze, we asked agencies not to come forward with anything but the most significant of positions. And so we have had, I think, 287 requests for an exception out of the 1,000. And we have granted like 250 of those. I would tell you that's not that we're easy to get by as an exception, but that agencies have taken seriously the charge to keep these frozen positions vacant. And they've come forward with positions that really are critical. For example, CNAs at Basin, you have to have CNAs in a nursing home. And so as a class, we gave an exception to the CNAs at Basin. And so that'd be one example, and I could probably come up with some others to talk to you about. But that leaves an average rolling number of 987 positions vacant. That might go to Chairman Harshman's earlier question that as we evaluate those, if we really don't need some of those positions, there would be an opportunity and a time to let those go. In this particular budget, we're actually giving back two positions. We won't have those two positions to fill, and we're giving back money associated with those positions. One of the complexities of the vacancy savings and what you need to do is that the legislature has granted both the Department of Corrections and the Department of Health flex authority. Those are the only two agencies that can use 100 series dollars in other parts of their agencies. Those are two very large agencies, and those are two agencies that carry a significant number of vacancies. So because they have been flexing their 100 series dollars with the express position, the express permission and blessing of the legislature, if you just pull those positions, you're going to have impact on the rest of their budgets. So it gets to be a pretty complex story overall. But in fact, there are 987 vacant positions across the state today, and I can tell you between the governor's budget and the first lady's budget, we're actually going to give three of those back because we can tell you without you needing to look at it that those positions are fair to give back to you and so that you have those no longer in the budget.
Go ahead, Representative Greer.
And I appreciate, Mr. Chairman, Kerry, I appreciate the explanation, but really to simplify it, if we reduce two positions, what we should do is the salaries of those two classified positions should have parentheses around them in the Series 100 reduced by that amount. That would simplify it for every agency. And I understand what we had to do with the Department of Health and Corrections.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Greer, I think I think so. I think I've provided you the best explanation that I can of the 500 positions out of the about 11,000 positions across the state that we allowed a reclassification for. Those were in great part categories of folks, not individual folks. And so that's something that we guard pretty heavily. And again, you should expect to see that those positions, that those increase or those changes in the salary based on classification will come back to you with no increase in the base budget of that department that we that they had to cover it internally. I don't think the legislature has normally set individual salaries of budgets. They just expect that folks follow the rules, and so we feel like we've made folks follow the rules. And so that would be, I think, the best explanation that I could provide to you.
Okay. Okay, please continue.
The next exception request is on page 29 of the governor's budget, and that is the money for the tribal liaisons, which were passed by this body last year, so the $400,000 for the two-year salaries of tribal liaisons.
Mr. Chair.
Go ahead, Representative.
Kerry, it was my understanding we were going to have an interim evaluation or a governor's evaluation of those two positions to determine whether or not they perform services that are equivalent to two full-time positions on the benefit of the tribes and the governor's office. Could you just give us an understanding of why, obviously, you've come to the conclusion, either politically or for one reason or another, that those are appropriate to have? And I would just like an explanation of how you came to that position.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Nicholas, I don't know that we have come to that that conclusion. So this legislation was passed last year, so which is a relatively short period of time. What we have set in place is what I would say a process. So each tribe nominates folks to serve as their tribal representative. In the beginning, and for a long time, the Northern Arapaho had decided not to participate in the tribal liaison program, and they had not nominated an individual. So since the legislation has been passed, the Northern Arapaho tribal liaison has been vacant. The Eastern Shoshone did immediately nominate a slate of candidates for the position. And then we picked Leslie Shakespeare in conjunction with the Eastern Shoshone tribe. Leslie Shakespeare, that process took, you know, a while. It took, first off, just to establish it and get it together, I think it took about 6 months. So Leslie Shakespeare has been up and running for a while, and we have a contract with deliverables. I think that was one thing that this body was concerned about is, so the contract has, concrete deliverables. Mr. Shakespeare has an office, here up in Cheyenne, and he has clear, responsibilities both to the tribe and to the state, with his negotiations. And I believe, you know, it's been a pretty short period of time to evaluate exactly how that works completely. But I think that the Eastern Shoshone have been happy with Mr. Shakespeare's performance. I think that our office has been happy with his performance. He has provided some real value in contract negotiations, for example, with DFS and Child Protective Services out on the reservation. Recently, the Northern Arapaho, I think, viewing the success of what's at least preliminary, I'll say success, of what's been going on with Mr. Shakespeare, has decided that they really do want to participate in the program, and they brought forward names. And I think we were just at the point of perhaps making a selection in conjunction with the Northern Arapaho at the point that the hiring freeze came in. So there is a process, and so that has to be written up and accepted just like every other position. And that, I think, has just recently gone through the process, and so I think you'll see a Northern Arapaho liaison come into place here very shortly. And I think that perhaps it might take until the next session to give you that kind of evaluation.
So, Mr. Chair, so would it not be appropriate for us to just give you one year of funding so that, number one, we make sure that those evaluations are taken place and that they're performing at a caliber and functions that mirror or match the amounts, the funding for basically two full-time employees?
Certainly. I think that, Mr. Chairman, Representative Nicholas, I think that you could certainly fund it that way if that would be a choice of this body. I think that there was a lot of work, I think, by the JAC, but the legislature as a whole, and I think the tribal relations to want to continue to solidify and build a relationship that's strong. And I do think there's a message for the dollar amount that we're talking about, that the state is committed to this kind of a relationship. I think that it was appropriate, and I think both the Northern Arapaho Eastern Shoshone would have agreed with the legislature that there needed to be some strengthening of what the concept was behind the tribal liaison. And I would tell you that I think both tribes have been committed to that. We have submitted a report to the Select Tribal Committee about the performance of this. And I think that Mr. Shakespeare has gone to all the meetings and has had a lot of interaction with them on how this is going forward. So I think that you could certainly do that. I just think for the dollar amount that a message of commitment is probably relatively important to both the Northern Arapaho and the Eastern Shoshone.
Mr. Chairman?
Go ahead, Representative Greer.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Kerry, can you tell me what was contemplated with the Series 900 with this part of the budget? What professional fees are they looking at or contractual services?
Tribal?
So
$160,000.
I'm sorry. What page are you on, Representative Greer?
29.
Well, I'm on 29, but I wouldn't count on me being on the right page.
Okay.
So I think that the tribal liaison, Mr. Chairman, if I may, the tribal liaisons are that it's a contractual relationship with the tribe. And professional fees, the program, so all of the appropriation you have provided is inclusive of all the expenses associated with the program. So if there are organizations that either liaison joins or participates in, that's an inclusive program amount.
Seems like a lot. So we really don't know what Mr. Chairman,
Representative Greer, I think what Mary Kay is trying to say is it's not a salary. They don't get $100,000 a year apiece. They get $100,000 a year covers all the expenses
Actually,
of the tribal.
It's 50 a year.
No, it's 400,000.
Okay.
Yeah. It covers all of the expenses of the liaison. That's the travel. That's if there's a contract to get a consult on something, and it's the salary and benefits of the individual in the position.
Well, the salary and benefits is about $60,000 per employee per year. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's $240,000 for the biennium for both of them, salary and benefits. But you got this number that Representative Greer is talking about, this $160,000 professional fees. I mean, who has $160,000 in professional fees, contracts? Where is that going? That's what we want to know, this 900 today. I mean, I think we understand the salary amount. Salary and benefits, $60,000.
We'll get back to you on that. Yeah,
those are, my understanding, largely the travel and the participation in meetings. The tribal liaisons don't spend all their time in Cheyenne. They spend quite a bit of their time in their home county. But we can break down that for you, and I would express this program is as established by Enrolled Act 74 from the last session, and so what attempted to do was to reflect that legislation in the way the budget rolled out.
Sure. Representative Stubbs.
And Mr. Chairman, just as I'm kind of kicking the rust off and trying to remember, so the reason this is an exception request is because it was passed last session. So if we were to go ahead and approve this full amount as is, I'm assuming it would roll in as part of the standard budget moving forward. Is that right or is that not?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Stevenson, it was directed by the bill, but that's exactly it. It was placed in the governor's office by the legislature. So that's where it comes from.
Senator Burns.
Yeah, I would also like to hear an accounting of that $160,000 for the 900 series. But I'm also curious. I remember the argument at the time when we passed this that the entire system at the time was kind of dysfunctional, and sometimes there'd be a liaison, sometimes there wouldn't. And so we were just kind of systematizing this, and we were paying for it. So I'm just curious from your discussion of it so far. Has a process for appointing those liaisons now been promulgated in rules? So whoever the liaison is, as I understand it, is hired by the governor, serves at the pleasure of the governor. But does he choose from a list of nominees by each tribe?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Burbs, that's correct. Yeah. And no, it's not in rules. I think it's just barely been set out, and I think we need to the process in the bill. Sorry. Excuse me. Thank you, Mary Kay. The process set out in the bill about how its selection goes.
Okay.
Yeah.
Thank you. And I would also like to get the accounting on that 160.
Okay. Any other questions? Okay. Please continue.
So the next request would be on page 37 of the governor's budget. That would be the disaster contingency. So that account is $1 million account for the governor to help with disasters such as what went on up in Buffalo this summer and down in Lusk and over in Casper. And so the account has been traditionally filled to $1 million, and this is to replenish the account to $1 million.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Stubbs.
Mr. Chairman and Carrie Joe, I'm trying, now is that essentially 2 years worth of refunding? Then I was trying to remember back last year, and I thought there was a request to replenish it last time and we denied it, and decided to wait until this year to do the whole thing. But is that accurate? Is this $344 for 1 year? Or?
My understanding, Mr. Chairman, Representative, that this is a total biennial. I understand there are more than one contingency disaster accounts within the scope of government. For this one, yes, specifically, it's a biennial amount.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Stepson, what I was just unclear about whether or not we asked and you denied it last time. I don't recall it being denied, but I'm not sure about the answer to that question. And the amount does depend on the year and the disaster. So in the year of the floods, where we had the flooding down in Saratoga, there was a lot more, and this body did fund it, as Mary Kay suggested, in other accounts to a much greater degree. And in the year of the fires, that was also the same. So this year, for Lusk and for Buffalo and Casper in particular, we needed to use this, but we didn't use nearly the funds this summer for disasters. So it kind of varies depending on what's going on.
Mr. Chairman.
Go ahead.
Okay, we had a supplemental request last year, and it was from flooding in the basin. And what I recall is we gave the governor expanded authority out of a different account and left that deficiency there. So I have the same question as Representative Stubson then. If we need $1 million in that account, is it actually more than the $344 spent this last year? Does it also include the amount that we deferred or moved in the supplemental budget? And my memory is not clear enough on exactly what we did.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Greer, I'm being coached from behind here. The request last year came from Homeland Security, who also has independently a disaster budget. And because it was at the end of a biennium, and there would be more flex authority at the end of a biennium where you would have an idea where there would be excess funds. This committee recommended, or this body, I guess, the legislature as a whole, felt that the flex authority would give the governor sufficient latitude to cover any end of biennium disasters should they occur. And so the disaster request out of the Homeland Security part of the governor's budget was denied.
Chair.
Representative Conley.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. And I'm not sure if this is really a question for Carrie Joe or for staff, but following up on Representative Stubbs and Greer's questions, I too vaguely remember last year that we decided that there was enough flex authority elsewhere to allow for the governor to respond, and that there was really no reason to have over $1 million in a coffee can just to wait. And so I am curious about what are the options that we have and that we can give the governor to be able to respond without just kind of socking money away.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Connolly, I think there is, through the B-11 process that the legislature has set out, I think really generous authority for the governor to cover a disaster if that's necessary. I think the purpose of this account is at the beginning of a biennium, if appropriations are made to agencies that reflect what is anticipated by both the agency and by the legislature as an actual need, that it's early to see that perhaps a program didn't come forward, or maybe that there was a reason that there would have been money left over, in that to take to fund disasters out of appropriations made by the legislature to agencies specifically probably would be extraordinary, much like the 310 that we used this time. The governor tries to limit changing appropriations of the legislature and redirecting the money to another account if it's at all possible. $1 million in the wake of a disaster, as many of you probably know if your communities have experienced this, really doesn't go very far to cover the kind of the need. I mean, when you, if you're setting up sandbags in Worland because of an ice jam, if you're down on the Saratoga when it's flooding into the town, or if you're up in Buffalo when it's getting into people's houses and you need to have the National Guard there, I don't think that to hinge on whether or not the money can be found.
Mr. Chairman, if I could
go ahead.
When Homeland Security, Representative Colleen, when Homeland Security presents, they will be able to offer, fill in some of these pieces on the disaster approach. Remember as well that you as a legislature have established mechanisms through which county responses can be matched with state dollars. And so Homeland Security operates those, and they can fill out those pieces.
Okay, so the total amount in the fund right now is how much again?
It's $1 million less $344,000.
Yeah. Okay. So it's not the 1.197 million minus 344. Go ahead, Senator.
So I'm looking at page 38, and there it looks to me like what you really got is you've got 300. What really looks like to me is you're really down $659,000, of
yeah.
which 315 is a standard budget request, and the balance is coming out of the LSRA. So it's and that's how you get back to your million, I think. Isn't that what we're talking about, Mr. Chairman?
That's the way it looks. So the balance is.
Mr. Chairman, Senator, I think maybe you're correct. Maybe I just misread that when I was taking my notes down to talk to you, because Title Agency Request 659, 334 out of the LSRA and 344 out of general fund. So I'm going to apologize for but the concept to get it back to $1 million is the same, and I think you're correct. I think I've misstated what we're asking for there.
Okay, go ahead, Representative Greer. You know, it's a process. We're all knocking the dust off.
We are.
So I see it's a lucky first agency.
Standard budget of 315, so 315 goes in every year into that account. And then because we spent 344,
everybody,
the recommendation is that comes out of the LSRA instead of the general fund. So the real question is, I think it's been asked three times, is how much is in the account right now?
Kevin, do you know the answer to that?
Don? I think Don's got it.
Mr. Chairman, as of this morning, there's $1,197,278 in the account. The whole amount that was originally appropriated in there, it still resides in the account. None of the funds have been expended for Johnson, Niobrara, Platte, or Albany counties to date. However, I understand that it is a reimbursement issue where the feds upfront the funds and then we have a payback. So there is likely some delay in that payment process.
So what will those payments be then, Don? 600, that amount? 659? Kevin?
Mr. Chairman, when the budget was calculated to bring this back to where it once was to, or to keep it whole, the original ask was for $344,000, and that original ask was generally funded. But because this is a one-time ask, the governor has made a recommendation to have that money come from the LISRA. So there's a need of $344,000 to bring the fund back to whole.
Mr. Chairman, there's a general budget. There's a standard budget of 315 and an exception request for 344.
Correct. So you adding the 315 that we know that we're going to get through the general fund standard, there's a need for an additional $344,000. And originally that was from general funds, but then the governor's made a recommendation in his column to make that LISRA.
Okay, go ahead, Kevin, or are you finished?
So the total budget ask for the upcoming biennium would be $659,000. $315,000 would be general funds, and the remaining $344,000 would be LISRA.
Okay, so, Kevin, then I'll ask the question again that Don pointed out. There's nearly $1.2 million in the account, but you expect some delayed billing that we're going to have to pay, and that amount is... the 659, or somewhat less than that.
Correct, Mr. Chairman. My understanding is that the budget ask brings us back to where we need to be once all the accounting has been accomplished. I'm not sure that all the accounting has been accomplished.
And then that keeps the account at $1.2 million.
Correct.
Mr. Chairman.
Okay. Senator Perkins.
Mr. Chairman, given that this the other end is a former county commissioner, I remember on some... the fire suppression stuff is the firefighting is kind of the same deal. And there were times when this stuff didn't come until 2-3 years after. It takes a while. It takes the wheels of the federal government turn incredibly slow. We get the benefit of the investment earnings from it, but nominal though they might be, but it does take a considerable period of time for all of that accounting to catch up with.
Okay, so I guess my question before we leave this then is the 315 standard. If the whole 659 is appropriated, is it going to be the 1.2 million, or is it going to be 1.2 million plus the 315,000? It's going to move this count up even a little more.
Mr.
That's
Chairman,
that's the standard budget amount.
Yeah, I think it's supposed to be $1 million, is my understanding. And so
right.
this is as Senator Perkins suggests, based on billings that are going to come from Niobrara, Natrona, and Johnson counties, and while those monies, maybe not reflected out of the budget at this time, they're estimated because FEMA pays, and then the county has a match, and so the state reimburses the county for their share of the match. So sometimes that process simply takes a long time, and it's allocated sort of based along the same requirements that the grants are given out to counties. So, for example, based on the income or the financial well-being of the county, all counties, it's a belief of the governor that he doesn't generally pay 100% because these are monies that would normally be paid by counties. So based on the formula that they use to give grants out of the mineral royalties account, based on that very same formula, counties are reimbursed some share out of this. So the 659 estimates the shortage in the fund to bring it to $1 million.
Okay, so that's something different then. So the shortage is more than the 659.
Yes.
Gotcha. 659 plus the nearly 200,000.
That'd be correct.
Yeah. Okay.
This account doesn't revert generally. I mean, that's a decision I think that gets made by this committee and the body every year, but because it's a disaster account, so in the years where it's not used, the committee lets the money stay, and in the years where it's pulled upon, you generally bring it back to $1 million.
And we've allowed it to continue.
Mr. Chairman.
Yeah, go ahead.
My understanding is once a disaster in a particular county goes over $1 million, FEMA picks up the tab after that. It's that first million that we step in on or not, or do I understand that?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Gray, I don't think that's right. It gets a little complicated, but generally speaking, it's more tied, match numbers is more tied to the nature of what happened, which businesses got hurt, how many homes got hurt. It's more kind of a degree of disaster rather than a dollar cap. And so whatever the disaster cost is, generally speaking, the state or county match is 25%. And then what the state has done, so when it's a disaster that's the state infrastructure, the state comes up with the whole 25%. When it's county infrastructure, the state uses the MRG amounts to give the county some assistance in coming up with their share of their 25%.
Okay. I think we've worked that disaster at the county. I think we all understand it now. Yeah. Please continue.
Okay. So at this juncture of the budget, Mr. Chairman, we'd be on the Homeland Security side of the budget, and Director Cameron and his budget officer. Oh, sorry, page 83. FINERPA. Sorry.
Could we just have one more?
Yes, one more in the governor's.
One more unit.
Yeah. And that would be the Federal Natural Resource Policy Account funding. And, again, this is funding that the legislature provides. It's on page 83. And I think this exception part of the governor's budget really was an answer to ESA and the kinds of work that has to go on to work on resource management plans that go on with the natural forest, with the forest and the BLM that really impacts Wyoming. So this money has generally been given out in the form of grants to counties and to I thought I was echoing in the corner. To counties and to cities as they participate in these programs around the state with regard to BLM resource plans and to ESA and different kinds of actions by the federal government that can affect us across Wyoming. So the intent of this account originally was to help counties and cities become more adept at participating in a meaningful way. And I think it has been effective as we've worked with folks across Wyoming when they participate in those plans that deal with forests or with BLM land or even with endangered species accounts. I would tell y'all that with regard to the sage grouse, there is some need to have some ongoing work with regard to sage grouse, and there is some thought that this money could help with some of the ongoing research with sage grouse to make sure that we remain positioned not to have that go backwards.
Okay, go ahead. Before Kerry leaves, the governor mentioned that the agencies had all identified further cuts that might be available. So with respect to the administration division and the policy division, do you have any areas that you've identified as lower priorities?
In the governor's office?
Yeah.
Mr. Chairman, I'm sorry. I apologize. I think singularly, and I'm a little bit, that we didn't do a priority chart, but we'll provide you with one. In the governor's office. I think we were probably the only agency that didn't follow that directive. So, excuse me, Kevin may be saying that we did, but...
No, I think we did. Yeah.
Mr. Chairman, the elected officials can speak to their priorities. They were not required to provide a priority chart to the governors and the elected officials.
But, Mr. Chairman, we're happy to provide one. I'd like to go back and look at it, not answer off the cuff here. Because I think that would just not be right, but we did not prepare a priority chart out of the governor's office, and we will prepare one.
Although, Mr. Chairman, I would add, if you look at the governor's profile, there are certain aspects on that profile that are priorities for the governor. For example, he requests $1 million for his water strategy. There's $1 million for his energy strategy. There are, over time, these accounts, which you, in cooperation with this governor, with other governors, have added funds to the governor's office to carry out specific initiatives. And so that is by and large the nature of those governor's budget line items. With regard to the policy office, I am eager to give you an analysis of how those policy positions have evolved over time and how we have fewer than we did have for you. And it is the policy folks then, Mr. Chairman, that carry out those initiatives that we have worked on together, whether it was the ITC and the carbon capture initiatives or the work in conjunction with the University of Wyoming on some of these major projects. 2 years ago, that entire footnote, Section 334, created lots of specific elements to that initiative. You also, when the issue with water quality and a question about meaningful research on what is affecting water quality, that baseline scientific piece of the governor's budget was a result of discussions with the legislature to create that activity to be managed by the governor's office. So many of those, as you look at them, are initiatives that began because there wasn't another place to put them, but the governor's office then works in turn with other agencies to disperse and implement, execute the discussions that we've had.
Okay. Representative Conley.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. Carrie, Joe, or Mary Kay, I'm curious, on page 84 under the performance justification, it says not applicable, but then there's a big chart that looks to me like the explanation for the $1 million. So first, is that true? Is that what we're looking at?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Conley, I think what you'd be looking at there is a historic list of where those monies have gone for use under the account. And so this account actually started prior to the election of Governor Mead into office. And it's an account that my understanding is, much as I think Mary Kay was trying to explain on the profile today, that this was a legislative gubernatorial initiative where it was just placed here. So I think the performance justification is probably written down as non-applicable because the performance of this count goes out to counties and to cities to do this work, to work hard to make sure that we're really relevant and educated when we have these interactions with policies being made by the federal government that really affect Wyoming. So that would be more an historic use of the funds, and I'm not sure if that's a justification or not, I guess.
Mr. Chair, follow-up?
Go ahead.
So, Carrie Jo, seems to me like the biggest figure is on page 86. It's $360,000. It looks like it's going to the County Commissioners Association, so over a third of the money. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Conley, not really, and I can get back to you on that. Folks, the person who works most closely with this account in our office is Jeremiah Riemann, and I will tell you that I look over all of the receipts and disbursements from the account, and the County Commissioners Association actually did a really effective, I think, kind of a study, and they've been a leader of all counties in helping them with these aspects and also with getting consultants when we need to make comment on a plan. So the fact that it goes to the commission wouldn't mean that it was used by the commission as an entity, more that it was an overarching kind of a need of the counties to help with. But to answer your question specifically, I'll have to get back to you.
I appreciate that. Thank you.
Okay. Representative Stubbs.
Mr. Chairman and Carrie Jo, I don't know if anybody's come to you with this yet, but I know we had conversations just last week with the County Commissioners Association about a new initiative on wilderness study areas and a multi-year effort that they're kicking off in cooperations with conservation groups and a number of other people to try to put together federal legislation which would make permanent the status of some of those wilderness study areas and then also release some of those areas to multiple use. And we had a discussion at that time about FNRPA and its the availability of using that as part of that that process, because it's going to be a statewide process led by the counties to facilitate that. So and our discussions then were that it probably the statutory limitations on FNRPA allowed it to be used for those purposes and it would be appropriate to use it for that effort. I don't know if your office has looked at that at all, but that may be another thing coming down the pike, a demand on these funds and maybe you've thought about that and talked with them about that.
Chairman Harshman and Representative Stubbs, and I don't know that I know specifically about that, Representative Stubbs, and I do know that the money has, which is probably the reason that comes up, that the money has been used for particular wilderness study areas, particularly I think one up in Washakie County. And, you know, that's a delicate topic. It's important to any community that's affected by it. So I may not have heard that one particularly, but that would be a good example of the use of the funds. And where that has statewide impact, that would be a reason that it might go to the County Commissioners Association versus an individual county.
Go ahead, Senator.
Mr. Chairman, just follow up on that in a general, just in a general concept to help out Ms. Gray is that counties through their commissioners are able to participate in forest management plans and range management plans as participating agencies. And in order to do that, they've got to have specific expertise so that when they act as participating agency in the comment and in the development of those plans, that the economic and recreational and environmental and all the other aspects of the county can be involved in a part of that process. And so the idea and the purpose behind awarding this and running it through the County Commissioner Association is they actually have that status, and so this provides them a resource so that they can have meaningful participation as a participating agency in those management plans, and which, you know, a classic example was the Bighorn, forest management plan, that the Bighorn County and their commissioners were highly involved in that as a participating agency, and it just takes resources and expertise to provide to assist the county so that they can, like I said, have meaningful participation.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Perkins, that's probably a better explanation than I gave, but for example, this year they came out with what was called the 9 plan. It meant that there were 9 BLM and forest districts that rewrote their management plans, and those plans remain in effect for more than 20 years, so their impact on Wyoming as a whole, but on individual communities and counties is really tremendous, and it's really important to have, you know, the right folks at the table with proper expertise.
Mr. Chairman.
Go ahead.
Reverend
Nicholas.
A couple different things. Don, I'd like to get a breakdown of what's been paid out over time since this was created, so we have an understanding of how the funds have been used. And then, Carrie Jo, I'd like to know who is the arbiter of who gets what money and how it's distributed. Is that from your office and how it happens? I notice in this there's almost $200,000 to the AG's office. And are those for consulting fees, or are you actually just passing money over to the AG's office for the Natural Resource Division to perform these functions? I know when I was in the AG's office, we did these functions, and we didn't have extra monies to do it. So I'm just curious why we would then pay the AG's office to do something that theoretically they're already supposed to do. I'd also like to know who the contract attorney, who supervises them, how do we know who's in their control of, what time, you know, and how does he report to if we're paying him $360,000 a year just for one staff attorney. and how he uses his time and how we know that that's being used in the best manner appropriate. And I'd also like to know why the AG's office can't perform that function, because we provided those services to the cities and counties and townies in years past, I presume before this legislation took place. So those are the issues that I'd kind of like to have a better understanding of when we address this in a markup.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Nicholas, I'm happy to provide that to you, how those decisions are made specifically. I think there's a report that's on file that actually breaks out over time all the expenditures. I can tell you for the AG's office that those monies often come back into the account. What they're particularly used for is more expert witnesses. So the AG does very little contracting of attorneys in these matters. The AG is generally handling them internally with their own attorneys. But some of these cases, as you would be aware, can get really expensive in terms of expert witnesses or where you're at. If you have a lot of travel, if you're actually in a forum in Washington, D.C. versus, for example, Wyoming, which sometimes you don't get a choice of a forum in these matters. And so it is to deflect the extraordinary costs of that kind of litigation. And it is not permanently in the AG's office. It actually goes over associated with a particular case or with a particular event. And then if the money isn't expended, it comes back into the account to be redistributed. And so I'll just get a complete write-up on that for you.
Senator Burns.
I'd like to thank Representative Nicholas. He had asked some of the questions I wanted to ask. On this, thank you for this list, first of all, the historic list. Coalition of Local Governments, that's not an organization. That is just basically a catch term for it's different. I'm asking different local governments in different cases for this. So in one case, it might be Hot Springs County and Fremont County. In another, it might be, Weston County and Crook County or something like that. So where does that, in that case, where does that money go? So you're giving money to different counties. You're just giving them the money? Do they put in bills to the state government to justify getting some money back?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Burns, first off, it's kind of a little bit like a grant application, so that the coalition or the individual local government would actually write in and give an explanation and a breakout of what they intended to use the funds for and what the benefit or need was. And quite often, because this is really significant to particular local governments and they really understand the long-term significance of the state, they volunteer some kind of a match amount or an allocation. So let's say if there was if they'd identified that they needed to have an expert come in and there was an RMP coming up on a particular forest and what they felt that they needed to do in order to adequately and meaningfully, I like Senator Perkins' terms, be involved in that, they would write that out. And generally speaking, they offer up, you know, they say, and we're going to put in $2 million of our money. And then those are sort of weighed with each other, but the idea is really to try to fund every single one, if that's at all possible, for the most effective kind of work to go on with regard to that. And so then different communities, if you're surrounded a particular area, actually do form a coalition voluntarily and come forward to do that, and they would say how the money was spent. So once the award is made, usually the money isn't given all at once. It's given as needed, and so the county usually will upfront, or the coalition or the city will usually upfront the expenditure and then provide an invoice for what they ask for in their grant. So it's really kind of an effective process where you can really track what the money is being used for, what the need is, and how the county or group feels that it's the most effective response. I'll tell you that I think overall that local governments would tell you that they're, that this fund and the assistance that the legislature provided to the governor's office has been one of the most effective ways that they've been able to deal with this, and that, that it really is sort of a collaboration of folks that gets together to try to be effective and uniform in the way that we ask, you know, to participate in these long-term federal plans.
Mr. Chairman, more questions. One is this historical expenditure here, this list, does this amount to about $1 million?
You know, Senator Burns, I didn't add it up, so I don't know that, but I know that we can give you a complete list with totals in it, probably on a yearly basis, if that's how the information would be most helpful.
Well, I was also wondering, is this list for the over the past 2 years or over the past 1 year?
I'm sorry, Senator. Mr. Chairman, Senator, I don't know the answer to that question. I'll have to double check it. I would suspect it's over the biennium. Usually, the appropriations for a biennium, and I don't think we ask for an exception request in our in the supplemental budget. But I'd have to double check that.
Well, you go back to on page 88. You go to the base budget, and it's 2.2 million, and you're asking for $1 million. So I'm wondering, did you spend $1 million, and if you only spent $1 million, why do you need another million? It looks like you still have 1.2 million or so. Or am I reading this wrong?
Mr. Chairman, the amounts in the FINERBA account are also established by the legislature. There's a statutory companion piece to the FINERBA account. And so the way it's set up is there are expenditures. There is a report that goes to the Minerals Committee and to the Natural Resource Select Committee. So that report's already done, and we should be able to have it for you quite quickly. But what occurs is then the request is for the amount to fill up to the previously statutory authorized amount.
Well, Mr. Chairman,
so you need the $1 million, and that'll be in that report. We'll
to take it back up to the 2.2 million.
Correct.
Okay. I guess raises the question when the legislature set that statutory amount, we were basically kind of spitballing it, trying to figure out what it was. Now we have historical figures saying it costs about $1 million. So I'm trying to figure out why we wouldn't want to reset that statutory amount in the recurring account instead of having the extra million just sitting there.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Burns, we can give you the historic amounts out of that account, so you get a whatever is available to us, whether it's a 5-year snapshot. And sure, whether it has $2 million is not as important to us as it is that the counties and the various entities who rely
right.
on this to defend
yeah, no,
have
I don't,
what they need.
I don't mean so. To short. The, I don't. Yeah. yeah. I don't mean to short the effort at all. It seems like we may have too much money sitting there waiting.
Any other questions? We kind of skipped around a little bit. We're going to skip around a little more. Part of the way this is made up a little bit as we bring in Homeland Security, we usually go through these kind of page by page, and I want to talk about, I'm just kind of looking at the summary page on the 900 series. And I'm on page 4. And just looking at that base budget and then how it drops the standard budget, what is that? I mean, is that reflective of what you've spent? I mean, is that kind of your current burn rate or what? What's?
Mr. Chairman, I'm going to defer to Kevin. I can't answer that question.
Mr. Chairman, the base budget was what the legislature authorized in all the actions in the previous biennium, which would include the original budget, the supplemental budget, or in some cases standalone bills. That was the budget authority that was provided. When you adjust that budget authority for the standard budget, you take all one-time money, including anything for computers as well. and any one-time money that was specifically identified by the legislature to be one-time funding. Sometimes the legislature requires us to ask for certain things again and again rather than allowing them to be standard budget. So that's the process of calculating the standard budget. And then, naturally, you have the exception column, and it moves through the JAC and then the legislature.
Mr. Chairman?
Okay, go ahead.
That's in you're looking at the bottom line. If you look where the big drop is in contractual services, went from 5.1 in the base budget to 2.3 in the standard budget.
That's, yeah.
And I'm wondering if were there some overly priced contractual services that were one time, or is are we kind of under?
Mr. Chairman, one example would be last biennium you provided $2.2 million for NERPA. This time you're asking to be the standard budget of $1 million. So that difference between the 900 series is what was appropriated through all legislative actions to what the standard budget is now.
Well, like clean coal drops off. I mean, deep water ports. Was that a, let me just scroll down to that. But if you look at, was that 900 series? That dropped off. But you look at policy office. Policy office remains the same. All right. I just,
Mr. Chairman, if you go to page 88, I think it'll help somewhat. The natural resource policy count, when in the base budget, through all the actions, they received $2.2 million. None of that became standard. So a large portion of what you're looking at on page 4 is directly associated with that action.
Excellent.
Now they're asking for $1 million, and that $1 million is basically what they think their needs are, and for direct, you know, what they believe they are directly.
Okay, so that's 1.2 of them.
So, actually, Mr. Chairman, the standard budget, 2.2 of it is because we didn't put a dime in the standard budget. So, if you go back to page 4. You'll see that in the 900 series amount, it went from 5.1 to 2.3. 2.2 of that is directly associated with for NERPA, and then the rest of it spread around. But the largest share of that is for NERPA.
So, okay.
Mr. Chairman, and also any remaining amount differential in that would be simply to what is allowed under standard and what has to come through an exception request. Right.
Okay, any other questions? Okay, you'll get us information then. We got the homework list. Everybody, anything else? If we need further, we'll certainly get a hold of you. We appreciate you being here today and your presentation. Okay, so
Mr. Chairman, did we want to hear from Guy Cameron?
Well, we're just done with this piece.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, and then we're going to move on to Homeland Security and then
to the residence budget.
Well, here's the deal. We're sitting here at I think we're just going to break and bring you back after lunch. It's 5 minutes to noon. Oh, you said residence?
Yes. Governor's residence?
Yeah, we could probably do that. We could knock that out. That's Agency 63?
It is, Mr. Chairman.
And then bring back Homeland Security afterwards. Give me a little longer.
Okay.
Carrie Jo, just take us through this, just page by page. You can just reference pages as you go and
great.
Point out any changes,
so,
highlights.
So I would just tell you, maybe just to start off with, so that there's two budgets under the governor's budget residence. So the first budget, I think, starts on page 6, and you'll see that it is a total budget of $688,000, I think, raised to $713,000 by virtue of raises and by the cost, increasing cost of health insurance. This is the budget that where all of the services at the residence, when they have events out there, dinners, different kinds of receptions for groups across the state, covers the staff and the employees that take care of the governor's residence. In this particular case, the First Lady has no exception requests. She does have one employee. It was a part-time employee that was at the residence when the governor first took office, and they have found that they really don't need the services of a part-time employee. And so when that individual left service at the residence, they did not fill that position. And so the First Lady has offered as part of her budget to give that position back so that it no longer exists at the residence, and 100% of the salary associated with that. And so I guess on page 7, there's kind of an explanation of that, Mr. Chairman. The 713 includes 3 full-time and 1 part-time position. And I think that I don't want to skip if I'm not quite on the right rhythm with y'all. But that's essentially the First Lady's budget. There's a little bit of detail on page 8 if anybody has any questions on that detail.
Okay.
Questions? Then on page 12 would be the second part of the residence budget. And this is a $5,000 standard budget that is used for the replacement of china, tablecloths, the kind of things that get worn out and need to be replaced periodically if you're going to operate, an entity that provides receptions and those kinds of things. And so, and there's no exception request associated with this budget.
I think we go through wine glasses a little faster at my house than you do at the governor's house.
Okay. So the...
faster with wine glasses when legislators are visiting the residents.
Terrible now.
Mr. Chairman?
I just a question back on page. So what is the amount? I'm looking at page 6, and then the page 6, the total is with the governor's changes, the reduction of 57,000. So the governor's recommendation is 656 on the table on page 6. Is that correct?
Yeah. Okay. Mr. Chairman, thank you. So the agency request was the 713. And actually, when the First Lady came in for her budget presentation, I just want to, that just to make sure that it's clear, the First Lady said we don't need this position, so but she had not included that in her original budget structure. So I guess that's right. The governor went ahead and took a position out of the First Lady's budget for a total request of 656. Apologize.
Okay. So the recommendation then removal, okay, got it, the 57,000. So it's the 656, got it. Okay, any questions, Senator Burns?
Yes, Mr. Chairman, I'm just curious, what are the 3 positions?
There is the position, I think they call it kind of chief of staff of the residence, and that would be Sue Akey's position. And she generally just has the overall management responsibility, make sure that scheduling of dinners or events that occur out at the residence and organization of any contracts and those kinds of things are put together appropriately. The other position is that of Becky Beavers, who is the chef, the executive chef, who actually does the meals and the hors d'oeuvres and puts that together. And the third position is that of the groundskeeper.
So where does the money come from, for instance, when the governor's having a big dinner and he has three or four of them with the legislators during the session, and I'm sure he has many others with, where does the salary for all that extra help come from?
I'm out of contractual services in this budget.
Okay.
Okay, so that, and that is, you have your 900 series.
Right.
And it's a little different format, so it's an eye test, actually.
Yeah.
We're going to have to talk about that on the break a little bit. But,
it's about $94,478.
And that's all authorized, has the authorizing statute. And okay, so that's where that is. Nothing else really out of that. Okay. Any other questions on Agency 93? Or 63, I should say. Any questions? Okay, anything else you have to add?
Just thank you for your time this morning, and we'll get back to you with that information, Mr. Chairman. And if there are any further questions or we need to provide clarification on anything, we're very happy to do so. So we're at your beck and call.
Okay, we'll break until about 1:15. 1:15, and we're still semi ahead of schedule, and we'll finish the governor's budget, Homeland Security at that time. Okay.
Mr. Chairman? So because Homeland Security really does operate kind of independently and the experts on that part of the budget would be Director Cameron, I can come back and be here for that if you want, or if not, I think that Director Cameron can handle that part of the budget fine.
I think I think I'm fine with that committee. We're fine with it on our end, you guys.
Okay.
Thank you.
Yes, I'm on the street also, but I think by this afternoon I will be off the street. So we welcome you, Mr. Chairman, and any of the committee who wants to stop by and get an orientation to the Idleman and the Attorney General's office over there. For the session, we'll be out here. We have an office, but we like to have you come visit us, and we want you to know where everybody that you like to contact is. So feel free if anybody wants to come by the Idleman. We'd love to give you a tour. We did.
In every respect.